Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax, put in the tweaked audio earbuds, and let's listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast, a life podcast, a personal journal, an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I'm your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a podcaster, a personality, a global traveler, but most importantly, I'm a professional wrestler. We are sitting here live in the studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before we go any further, this podcast is fan-supported and listener-supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday on WeLoveColt.com and on iTunes. Please subscribe on iTunes so it comes to you automatically every single Thursday morning. It's just that easy. If you do want to support, you can. How about leaving a review on iTunes and rating it? Maybe tell a friend, let them know what's going on over here, the mission that we're doing. But if you do have a couple dollars and you want to support monetarily, you can go over to ColtMerch.com. That is my merchandise store online. That's kind of how I keep this thing afloat. I have t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs, and much, much more. A lot of fun stuff over there, and I ship it to you personally. I do it myself. I got my own little shipping zone here in the studio apartment, and that's how I make it happen. No frills, no thrills. Just me, a hard man working over at ColtMerch.com. The guest this week is MVP, and I think it's a real important podcast this week. You know, originally when I started this thing, you know, over a year and a half ago, a lot of it was I was sick of going on some of the internet shows, and I was sick of having to talk and getting cut off during Skype conversations or stuff like that, and I wasn't really able to open myself up the way I wanted to, and I wasn't comfortable with the people that I was trying to open up with. So, you know, when I'm able to sit down, you know, in a hotel room and I'm hanging out with a friend and me and MVP are talking, and he feels comfortable to talk to me in a way of explaining stuff where we just feel like it's a conversation, and to him it's just normal. He's talking about his life, but then when you listen back and when you think about it, it's amazing, and it's crazy what this man has been through and what we're able to talk about. And it's not so much about wrestling, but that's not really the point of the podcast. So the point is that we all have these crazy lives and what we've done, and to get where we are in the world of wrestling and why we're known to you guys, the wrestling fans, or you guys, the fans of people in life. And his is wild. It's a real wild one. And you'll hear me even going, I have to step back a couple times because he's been through a lot. He's done a lot. He's seen a lot. And it's great that he's made his way, his transition into the successful life in the world of professional wrestling, and we're all able to understand what he's gone through. And in saying that, we sit down in a hotel in Manila in the Philippines, which is another story in itself. I'm on a giant... if you think about the people that were on this tour, Billy Gunn, Carlito, Chris Masters, all these guys have been in the lap of luxury. They've been taken care of by the big guys, and they've been on these tours. And I don't know for them if it's nothing, but for me it's unbelievable. I'm 5-star dining and 5-star hotels, and it's not supposed to happen to me, and it probably won't happen again. But in this instance, I find myself in the Philippines in Manila amongst good friends. But I'm not the guy that's been taken care of that well throughout my career in terms of the luxuries. You know, it's usually sleeping in my car or in shitty hotels or at fans' houses. And for this one instance this week, I get to be flown across the country to ring announce and to host, to do some hosting duties. And the promoter was basically like, he's been a fan and fond of what I've been doing in terms of, you know, not just in the ring, but outside the ring. So it gives me other opportunities. And this opportunity was to fly to Manila, was to get put up in a nice hotel, was to get great meals, was to meet nice people. There was only 4 upgrades for a crew of 16 people. Somehow I found myself in business class with Chris Masters and Carlito on the flight there, which is just another beautiful thing. And then to see all the other guys back in coach, and it's like, I don't have to worry about giving my seat to The Undertaker or Triple H or any of these guys. You know what? I'm going to sit in first class, and I'm going to hang out, and I'm going to enjoy the fruits of my labor, the luxuries, or maybe the lotto that I won, the Manila lotto. And I just couldn't have been happier. It's called WWFX. Hopefully, you know, more are to come. But for that point, it was a real fun time and a real highlight in my career. And I wasn't even wrestling. It was just the fact that this was able to come to me. And it was nice. Also on these tours, the great things about them is that you make new friends. You meet new people. You know, I liken it to when people Facebook me or Twitter me or message me and say, Cole, I didn't know that this guy was so great. I didn't know Tyson Dukes was so great. I didn't know that Cassandra was such a wonderful person, or Luke Gallows. And it's the same thing for me. I go on this tour and I couldn't have told you. I didn't know Billy Gunn was this funny and this fun and this fun-loving and this nice. And I didn't know Gene Snitsky was a goofball and a fun dude to hang around with and love toes that much. I thought that was fake. That's real shit. This guy loves toes and legs. And that makes for a fun trip. It really does. Unfortunately, on the way out of Manila, as we're flying away from the Philippines, there was an earthquake that took a couple lives in the city of Manila. And luckily, we were on the plane as it was happening. When I got home, my mother had called me. She was crying. I said, Mom, you're so lovable, loving your son, tears of happiness that I get to travel the world and meet new people. But it wasn't necessarily the case, as some tragedy went down there, and my thoughts are with those people. And I don't know if it was luck or I don't know, you know, it's just situational, but I'm glad that I didn't have to be a part of that. But the reality is that people will have to deal with that, and my thoughts are out with them. But luckily, I'm back in America. Things are going great. The Wrestling Road Diaries 2 will be coming to a town near you. Not necessarily, but I do recommend getting in on that. And joining the fun, myself, Luke Gallows, Cliff Compton. They've been talking to me and planning mayhem and madness, which gets me excited. They said it's going to be a much different vibe from the first one. They plan on getting wild and getting crazy, showing how they live on the wrestling road. And I'll be along for the ride. I look forward to it. Got a busy schedule. Everything's happening. The schedule's up on the website. And we're doing it. We're podcasting when we're living life. But first, Song of the Week this week brought to you by ChikaraPro.com. My friends at Chikara are running 2 great shows that I will be on February 25th and 26th in Reading and New York. Again, fun-loving wrestling action by Chikara. A great, you know, for everybody, all ages, and they put on a wonderful show, and I'm so glad to be a part of their promotion and their organization, and I can't wait to wrestle for them. Song of the Week, of course, MVP is on, so we gotta holla to the world. His first single, we'll play it, and then we'll talk to him right after this.
Another day, another dollar as a holla to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls, love the parties and the clubs, love the models and hot tubs, love the German engineers set on deep dish dugs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day from these and oyster, crack it open, find the pearl. I love the way I'm living, is what I holla to the world. Wake up in my bed and I'm feeling kinda stuck from this Tempur-Pedic mattress, I don't wanna get up. Roll out of bed, plant my feet on the floor. There's a girl wrapped in my sheets, don't know her name anymore. Hit the shower, scrub myself fresh and clean. Get dressed in fresh Adidas and some Presta Vizu jeans. Pull on a white V-neck with a horse and rider. Go back to the girl in my bed and sit beside her. Hey pretty girl, I hate to wake you from your slumber, but it's time to go, so leave your name and number. I walk her to her car and click my gate open. She says, and in her eyes I see she's open. And she'll get back to this palace that I live in. I'm sure she will, I dig the sex that she was given.
Now I'm gonna call you for real, I promise.
Another day, another dollar as a holla to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls, love the parties and the clubs, love the models and hot tubs, love the German engineers set on deep dish dugs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day from these and oyster, crack it open, find a pearl.
It's called Compton.
You guys on the podcast, back on the podcast. MVP, living the good life.
Oh, man, this is absolutely lovely, man.
Yeah?
Here in Manila, having a blast.
There you go. Let's get into this microphone.
Yeah, let's get properly into
there
the microphone.
There you go. Now, right. Of course, no fears of microphone yourself.
No, actually, the microphone has been my friend.
Can we talk about the music?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to plug the music.
All right, cool. You know what?
Song of the Week is definitely going to be your song. I've been waiting not to play it. I've been waiting not to play it until I got you on.
Sweet. Okay.
Or maybe we just talk about rap and hip-hop in itself.
Well, how about this? We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Nothing's off limits. You bring it up and we'll cover it.
Well, I just want to converse.
I like to converse.
I know. Now, recently, I don't want to get you on this long tangent, but you are now in my lineup of top hip hoppers in the world or whatever. Like Tupac is the man, but you don't think so.
I'm not a Tupac fan. No.
Are you willing to get this? I mean, there's going to be the Tupac lovers who are now going to be like...
Oh, no, I actually had some people on Twitter ask me if my account had been hacked when I expressed my views on Tupac.
Okay.
I lost cool points. I can't believe you say that about Tupac. Here's my issue with Tupac. As a poet, he was awesome. He made some really good songs. But there's this this false air about Tupac that, you know, he was a thug and he was a gangster and he was a G. He was none of those things. As a matter of fact, I'll go on record as saying Tupac was like one of the original studio gangsters. A lot of people don't know that he was part of Digital Underground with Shock G and Humpty Hump.
I know this.
And, you know, he was. If you watch some of their old videos, you can see him in the background dancing with Daishikis and Kente cloth crowns. And he used to carry records for him. And even Shock G himself said, you know, he got... Props to Tupac for his success and how well he's doing. Where all that thug life shit came from, he has no idea. And this was from Shock G. You know, he went to the New World School of the Arts, for Christ's sake. You know, I'm not knocking a dude for his success. Kudos to him. You know, he's become a bit of an icon.
He's doing really well for himself recently also.
Yeah he's doing real good for himself nowadays.
In the latest album he put out last year, I think.
But in all seriousness, when Tupac went to prison, he went to protective custody. And he put out this manifesto that thug life is dead and, you know, I don't want to do this anymore and this isn't, you know. And then as soon as he got out of prison, you know, fresh out of jail, I'm out on bail, California dreaming, you know, he's back to being a tough guy. Well, it's real easy to be a tough guy on the street, but when your ass is in prison and you ain't got a posse and you ain't got guns and you got to stand on your own, well, you know, that's when you find out who you really are. And like I said, on professionally speaking, Tupac was an awesome poet, you know, but he had internal conflict that he was dealing with, but he wasn't a G. He wasn't a gangster. He wasn't a killer. He wasn't any of those things. And that's why I have so much respect for Ice Cube, because Ice Cube was one of the founding members of NWA. And Ice Cube has always said from day one, I was never a gangster. I was never a banger. I never shot anybody. My father had my ass in the house at 11 o'clock. But my cousins lived that life, and I was a witness to it, and I had the ability to rap about it, and that's what I did. And to me, that's all it should be.
What was your favorite family vacation movie?
Nice change. The Griswolds.
No, of the Ice Cubes. Wasn't he in? No?
I'm thinking of...
Johnson's Family Vacation? Yeah, sorry.
I haven't seen any of those, man. Well. You know, I always wonder, do the people at Disney... You ever watch So Boondocks?
I've seen.
It's hysterical. It's really good. But the younger kid character on there, Riley, he's like a little badass. And
it's a cartoon, though, right?
Yeah. It's an animated show.
Where they drop the N-bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
A lot.
Like crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's one scene where Huey is talking to Riley about Ice Cube. And Riley says, Ice Cube? You mean the guy that does all the Disney movies? There's a segment of kids out there today that don't know Ice Cube used to, you know, that he did Death Certificate and America's Most Wanted. And you know, here's a little something about a nigga like me. You know, they don't know that Ice Cube. They know Family Vacation and Are We There Yet and all that bullshit. And have you ever heard Ice Cube's song Cave Bitch?
I don't know.
I
if anything, my genre, I'm not a huge music guy, but my genre is rap and hip hop. That's what I enjoy. But I don't know lyrics, and I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Do me a favor. When you get a chance, listen to Cave Bitch. I actually have it on my iPad.
Okay. Which era of this was him?
Oh, which album was it? Was that America's Most Wanted? I think it might have been America's Most Wanted. I don't remember exactly, because when Ice Cube popped off on his solo career, I was locked up myself. But later on, I heard the song Cave Bitch, which is basically a very insulting, degrading song about white women. And I wonder if the Disney executives know about this song, Cave Bitch, when he's out here making these Miller Lite commercials or whatever the fuck, these Disney movies.
They're secretly like, like, I'm in with the guy. They love it that they get to hang out with Cave Bitch, man.
The guy, that made the song Cave Bitch. You know, if you listen to it, you go, oh, shit, he said that about white women?
Yeah, I guess is, man. And who else? There's other people, though, in the society. And, you know, I can't think of it right now. But also, you got to think of people even in like the adult, like porno dudes are becoming mainstream. If that, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, and if
Sasha Gray,
and if you're booking her and you're like, I can't, you know, like, hey, did my, I don't know, if they're doing something and you're like, have you ever seen this on film? It's available, but that's what the stickers are for, the parental
so suggestion. Thank you, Tipper Gore.
Fuck, what was I going to say? I had something very important. All right. Oh, no Vaseline was...
No Vaseline.
Yeah, that's what
classic.
I'm...
Classic. Stop giving props to the Raiders, because Al Davis never paid us.
That's some hardcore shit. And when you're like 13, and you're like, what's... And I'm in my suburban, you know, school, and I'm like, what's going on out there in this world, you know?
And you know, that's... Segueing back to Tupac and N.W.A. and that whole scene, when I first heard N.W.A., I was 15 years old, and I was locked up in a level 5 juvenile facility. And my buddy Cujo, Guillermo Martinez, I remember, he smuggled the radio in when his family came to see him, and his brother was a DJ, and he gave him a bunch of tapes. And we were in our cottage or dorm or whatever the fuck it was called. And we're just fast-forwarding through the tapes to see what songs are on there. And as we're fast-forwarding, we press play, listen to a couple seconds. And then we stop and press play, and we hear, or I'm going to bust your ass in the mouth unless you're saying Compton's in the house. We're like, what the fuck? We listen to this song, and this guy's, you know, the motherfucking record is so motherfucking wacky, motherfucking Cracker Jacks need to step the fuck back. And they're like, whoa, what is this?
Right.
So N.W.A. comes out, and they're talking about going into parties and whooping ass and riding hoopties and doing drive-bys. This is the shit that me and my squad, I was doing that kind of shit at that age, 15, 16. So there's a definitive line of guys that were doing this kind of shit when that music came out. And then after that, a bunch of kids that wanted to do it because it sounded cool.
Were influenced by
the music. And I remember being in prison, seeing 15, 16-year-old kids with Thug Life tattooed on their stomach with life sentences. You're never getting out of prison. You were influenced by this guy or this genre. You wanted to be that because you thought it was something that it's not. Now you're going to be in prison. You're 16. You're going to be in prison for the rest of your life with that Thug Life tattoo on your stomach. And the motherfucker that you idolize is not that. You know,
Well, then let me transition that real quickly to professional wrestling is about punching people in the face. And it's like, you know, you hear so much of like people at school doing DX chops and getting, and it's like, is that almost the same thing where this, you know, Tupac is speaking the words and people are getting life sentences because they're trying to be influenced to that, and the same structure as people on the playgrounds are punching little kids because they see it on wrestling. You know, I mean, I don't have an argument either way, but I mean, you know, I want to argue that, oh, it's just pro wrestling. But also, you want to argue that it's just music.
Well, I think the danger. I mean, you know, you can watch Tom and Jerry, and a little kid can, you know, see Tom get hit in the head with a sledgehammer and go, "Ooh, I'm going to hit my little brother with a sledgehammer." You know, I don't. To me, that's kind of silly. And you know, wrestling kids on the playground do shit and hurt each other. And you know, if you took wrestling out of it. Kung Fu movies. We used to watch Kung Fu and kick the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
You know, you watch any movie. I watch Indiana Jones, and I'd climb to the top.
I just watched it the other night.
Okay, I'd climb to the top of the fucking monkey bars and jump off and pretend I'm jumping off a cliff, and oh, shit, I sprained my ankle. I mean, but when you're talking about And let me make this very clear. I'm not saying I don't like Tupac's music. I mean, he made some potent songs. Brenda's Got a Baby, Dear Mama. I mean, he's got some really good shit. But, you know, a lot of his G shit, I just think, influenced a lot of young minds in the wrong way. And right about the time that he died, he was starting to turn the corner. And a lot of people don't know, he was actually trying to spearhead an East-West uniting movement. You know, I think Wendy Day, who represents me now, she was telling me that he was actually the guy that was trying to put together a thing to unite the East and the West when they were having all this big beef. So, and when you think about where Tupac comes from, you know, his mother, Afeni Shakur, and then the Black Panther movement. I mean, he's got an awesome history. I think he could have been a much better, much positive role model, if you want to say that, or could have had a more positive influence on young urban teenagers that were obviously looking for some sort of a role model. But
would you, at any time in your life, can you consider yourself a G?
A G.
And you have to chuckle the way I said that also.
Like, yeah. The very Caucasian hate. You're a real G.
MVP, here's a question for you.
Well, I you know, by definition, a G being, you know, a gangster, a thug. I mean, when I was 15, I was in a gang and we used to do drive-bys.
What was your gang code?
The KOP. We were the Knockout Posse. And we started as a graffiti crew.
Is this just like your boys, or were you like, was there a KOP that had been going forever?
No, it's funny. It was just a group of guys that were into graffiti, and I used to hang out with them because I was into graffiti. We used to go tagging and bombing. And one of the members was in a gang called the Latin Force, which was a big gang in Miami many years ago. And Latin Force had merged with YLO, which is a Young Latin Organization, and they became YLO Force. And our clique was originally the Kings Only Posse. But because of the gang affiliation, there was beef with the Latin Kings. So we changed it to Knockout Posse, and our graffiti crew became third chapter of this gang. And just one day we were like, hey, we're a gang now. All right, cool. And then next thing I know, we're fighting and, you know, gunplay and all this other crazy shit came into it. So it was a gradual process.
Is there, like, you seem to know all these rules and all these, like, things. And, like, A, is the internet prevalent in gangs these days? And, like, how would you know all that information? It seems like wrestling, like dirt cheating. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know, that's a really good question. I have no idea what kind of relevance the internet has on gangs these days. Actually, to be honest, I'm pretty far removed from the gang culture. You know, I don't know what's going on these
days. So does that information just, like, is that passed down from person?
Oh, yeah,
just
yeah,
the
yeah.
streets? Is that where you get your information?
Well, a lot of gangs is weird because a lot of gangs actually have, like, bylaws and rules and you're taught this when you come into the gang.
It's like a gang secretary and a gang.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
A treasurer.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Some gangs are actually run like, you know, criminal enterprises, and they have rank and you have rules you have to follow, and there are bylaws and penalties for violating these rules. And, you know, our gang wasn't quite like that. We were just like a bunch of fucking misfits that were just, you know, wilding out. We weren't affiliated with anyone. We were just young and crazy. But
what was your best tag? What, did you have a trademark?
it's funny. On my hand, in the web of my hand, I had that tattoo that says K.O.
Okay.
And I used to write up alone, A-L-O-N-E. That's what I used to write up, alone. And I would always put a dot in the O. And anytime I would write K-O-P, I would always spray paint a dot in the middle of the O. So if you saw K-O-P somewhere with a marker or paint can spray paint, and you saw the dot in the O, you knew I did it. That was my little trademark. You know, that was my KOP.
For your love of titties.
Yeah.
So that was always your...
That was just, so, you know, when you, if you were somewhere and you saw spray painted on the wall KOP and there was a dot, you know, oh, man, okay, my boy did that one. You know, just...
Was it a rough upbringing? Do you have a mom and dad? Or?
My upbringing, actually, you know, it's weird. We were poor and I didn't realize how poor we were. Until years later in life, you know, I'm a single mom. My father was around, but, you know, he wasn't there every day. My parents were never married, you know, high school sweethearts. My mom got pregnant when she was like 18, 19, right out of high school or something. But my mom raised three boys pretty much by herself. You know, my father was around, and, you know, we had interaction, but he didn't like help raise me. And I grew up in Miami in the late 70s, early 80s. So I saw, it's funny, being the oldest of three boys, my mom relied on me to help, you know, be a grown-up. Actually, I had to, you know, sometimes start dinner before she got home and keep an eye on my brothers. And, you know, I had to be precocious. I had no choice. And, you know, it was funny growing up in Miami during the cocaine cowboy days. You know, at 9 years old, I knew what a Rolex Presidential was, you know, and I knew how much it cost. And I wanted one. And but by the same token, there were times when I would get home from school and see the eviction notice on the door. You know, and there were times when I'd, you know, peek in my mom's room and I'd see her, you know, crying. And, you know, she was working a full-time job, a part-time job, and going to school, you know, trying to make it happen. And, yeah, I lived in Opa-locka. And Opa-locka is not a very...
It's a city?
Yeah, it's a city.
In Dade County?
Yeah, in Dade County. It's just outside of Miami. And there's an area in Opa-locka known as the Bab. And it's such a... it's a huge drug area. And at one point, it was so bad that they had to send the feds in to clean it out. It was just, you know, per capita, I think the murder rate was like among the highest in the nation. And, you know, being the oldest of three boys, I got beat up a lot. And it's weird because my mother's white, my father's black. And I lived in a black neighborhood, but my mother made sure that I went to white schools so that I could get the best possible education. So the white kids called me nigger, and the black kids called me cracker. And I was fighting all the time. I told people I had my ass kicked more times than most people have actually had fights. So there was no haven for me. Nowhere for me to go. And by the time I was 12, my mom took advantage of some of the government programs that were in place, and we moved into a house. And then we were out of Opa-locka, but we were in unincorporated Dade County, just between Opa-locka and North Miami. You know, it was a step up, but not a whole lot.
And did your brothers fall into? I mean, their big brother's steps?
No, fortunately, man. I was very fortunate that both of my younger brothers did not follow my path, and I worked really hard, you know, to try to steer them away. And you know, my mom would bring them to come visit me when I was locked up. And, you know, they would see the gun towers and the razor wire and the fences, and, you know, the whole effect is pretty traumatic if you've never been in a jail or a prison. It's like, well, this is...
It's easy to scare them away, probably.
And, to see, like, man, my big brother's in this place and he's not coming home for a long time. So my younger brother actually became a cop, and he's a decorated cop. Right now, he's in Afghanistan. I can't recall if he re-enlisted or if his, reserve time wasn't finished and he got called up or something. Whatever the case, he's in Afghanistan because playing cops and robbers wasn't fun enough for him.
Right.
And the youngest, my baby brother, Justin, he's about a year away from getting his doctorate degree.
Excellent.
Yeah, so excellent. They did well.
So you went in at
16.
You started living the life.
Actually, my first major arrest was at 15. It was for armed robbery, strong arm robbery, aggravated assault, grand theft auto, resisting arrest. It was like a laundry list of shit.
Was it for one shot or?
No, it was like a spree.
Okay.
The funny, it's funny now.
But, right.
I had a stolen car that me and my buddies did a robbery in. And
is this just you were young and like just thought nothing would ever come of it? And it was like doing it for like shits and gigs almost,
or
was it like
for
you
money?
You had a major plan going on.
I was trying to get paid.
Okay.
You know, I used to say all the time, the world was my ATM.
Right.
And the funny thing is that my parents raised me right. My dad was actually a cop and my mom was an accountant, you know, and I knew right from wrong, but I like nice things and I like
the
money.
Rolex and
And I always had a job. When I was a little kid in our apartment complex, I used to go around with a shopping cart knocking on people's door offering to take their trash out for a quarter. So I was always a hustler. And when I was in junior high school, I had a job selling newspapers, and then I got a job at the mall at some grocery store. And then I remember I got a job as a stock boy at Winn-Dixie, and I got fired. And after that, I was like, man, fuck this shit. And that's when my robbery career started. And the case that I got locked up for the very first time, we had a stolen car that we did an armed robbery in. And actually, it's a fucked up story. Me and my buddy Dustin, who actually ended up getting shot and killed by a rival gang, Dustin Giglio, rest in peace. We were going to a teen club, me, him, and my other buddy, Kango. And as we were driving through this lot, there was some guy at the ATM. And we weren't even paying this guy any attention. All of a sudden, he starts mean mugging us. And he picked the wrong three fucking knuckleheads to mean mug because he had no idea, you know. So I was like, man, what the fuck is that dude looking at? And Dustin's like, man, fuck that dude. I'm like, man, Kango, go rob that motherfucker.
Jeez.
So we jumped out. Kango fucking robbed his ass, and he jumped in the car. And Kango said he ducked down on his seat, and we heard Kango fire a shot. So Kango said he thought that the guy was going up under his seat to get a pistol. So as we're driving out of the parking lot, the dude chased us.
In his car?
Yeah. Okay. So now he must have a gun. He knows we got one, and he's chasing us. So I got the pistol from Kango. I leaned out the window and just fucking unloaded. And the guy's windshield shattered, and he crashed. And we were like, oh, shit, I killed him. Damn. And Dustin, this crazy bastard, was like, oh, man. Damn, I wanted to kill him. You know, we just clowned him, like young idiots. And so I was supposed to get another car because that car had the heat. But being lazy, I didn't get rid of the car right away. And then we ended up doing another robbery in that car. And then the day that I was saying, look, this car is fucking hot, I need to go get another car, I was actually looking, I was pulling out of a parking lot looking for another car to steal when I got pulled over by the cop. So that tag had all these robberies and all this.
You got pulled over for what?
Well, the cop,
not at a stoplight, or
no,
looking for you?
As the cop, the cop said that we were lurking. We looked like we were lurking, which we were.
Okay. You know?
And he went to just do a routine stop, and you know, we all jumped out and hauled ass, and they set up a perimeter, and they had the dogs and the choppers. And
man, this is movie stuff, but it's real life.
Well, that's what I tell people. In my life, I have done and seen things that most people have only seen on a movie screen.
For sure, for me, and, like, all I'm picturing is a big movie, right?
Yeah, and sometimes when I tell some of my life experiences, I know people have to go, this dude's full of shit. That didn't really happen. No way. But, you know, I did these things. I lived this life. And I said all that to say this. I ended up getting caught for that. And I did 6.5 months at a juvenile facility. My buddy Kango actually got direct filed, which was sent to the county jail to be adjudicated as an adult. And he went to a youthful offender prison. And I dodged that bullet the first time. I did 6.5 months in a youthful offender camp. I got out, stayed out about 6 months. And my best friend, I was just talking about, Dustin, got shot and killed by a rival gang. And it was weird. I remember being 15, turning 16. Not giving a fuck about my life. I had no fear of dying. I didn't care about living or dying. And I didn't give a fuck about your life. And it was just a real weird time. And I made up my mind that I just wanted to do one big score. I wanted to marry my high school sweetheart. I wanted to go in the Navy and get away. And I knew I needed to change the pace in life because, you know, guys I knew were getting shot and dying. And I had a moment of clarity. So I needed that one big score. And that one big score, I ended up fucking getting sent to prison for.
Did you have like a whole Ocean's 11 sit down with guys and a game plan?
Yes, absolutely. I'll tell you, we robbed the Discovery cruise ship. And,
okay.
And it's one of those like in Fort Lauderdale.
Which my parents were probably on, by the way.
They may have been.
That's how circular this works right now.
It's like that 3 hour cruise to nowhere where they like cruise out past the 3 mile limit. Then you can gamble for a few hours and they come back. One of the guys, my buddy Jack, he's also passed away. He used to be a security guard on the ship. So he had for the longest time been trying to figure out a way to pull off the heist. But he had no robbery experience. I had just been out of this juvenile project. Just got out. I had been out for a few months. And I told my buddy Pep, hey, man, I'm looking for a score. You know, if you hear anything, let me know. Little did I know that Pep had already been talking to Jack, and they were planning to do this score. They said, okay, well, let's bring him in. And they told me they want to rob a cruise ship, a casino on a cruise ship. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here, man. And when they told me what the idea was, I said, well, it sounds doable. So we actually went on the cruise, and I kind of scoped the thing out. I said, well, with a little fine-tuning, I think we can pull this shit off. And we had an Ocean's 11-type fucking sit-down, synchronized our watches to the second. It was all – we smuggled the guns on board the ship in a hollowed-out guitar in a guitar case. We played the role of musicians, like, leaving the ship, and we got away with over $100,000 in cash, and we got caught because the guy, Pep, his dad – found his shoebox full of money.
No.
He took out a second mortgage on the house, got an attorney, and the attorney went to the DA and said, well, we can give you the Discovery cruise ship robbery, but my client gets immunity. And he got full immunity. He never spent a day in jail. And I refused to make a statement. I was the only one in my case that didn't make a statement. I'm not going to snitch.
Was that like the discovery? Did people know of this Discovery robber in Miami?
Oh, dude, it was all over. Yeah. It was on CNN. Really? That shit made national news. It was like, you know, modern day pirates,
right.
You know.
Okay.
And it was actually funny because the day after the robbery, I was in bed with my girlfriend. And one of the things that Jack said, he said, look, man, you know, they're not going to make a lot of publicity out of this because they're not going to want to scare the passengers. You know, they might hire some private detectives or a little research, but it's not going to be the big news thing. So we're like, that made sense to me.
Sure.
You know? And I'm laying in bed with my girl, and the radio was on, and I heard the morning show DJ say, last night, masked bandits stormed into the casino aboard the Discovery cruise ship. And I woke up. I said, baby, did you hear that? She goes, well, you go back to sleep. You're dreaming. You know, it was like, you know, 6 a.m. or something. And I'm like, damn, I'm so paranoid. I'm dreaming that this shit's on the news. And then when it came back around again, she goes, baby, wake up, wake up. I'm like, son of a bitch. Then there was Crime Stoppers, and it was the lead in on the news. And they had, sketches of me and the whole deal. I was like, motherfucker.
Was like, what are the nerves going in and out of that stuff? And like, I mean, you're like, I don't care, fuck everybody, but like, are you nervous? Are you?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
are you
yeah,
nervous
yeah.
for like 2 days after, 10 days after?
The anxiety comes like right before you do the robbery. And I'll say this, here's one of the things that is really weird. Before we actually went in and did the robbery, we were hiding in like a little storage room and an electrical room inside the casino. And we had 2 sawed-off shotguns. And the other guy, Pep, he's actually dead too. His teeth were chattering like Scooby-Doo. I mean, literally to the point where you could hear like clack, 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 clack. I'm like, you all right, man? He goes, yeah, I'm just a little scared, man. You know, I said, you gonna be okay? He goes, yeah, I'm good. And I remember telling him, fuck, man, this is weird because I'm not scared. And I need to be scared. I need that edge. And I got scared because Pet was scared. I was thinking, man, this teeth chattering motherfucker here, this could be bad.
He's got to be up to something's like.
Something's not
maybe
right.
Maybe he's right because.
So what I did, I actually took, unbeknownst to him, I actually took the shells out of his shotgun. Because I'm like, there's no way I'm going into the casino with this fucking dude just blasting people at random
right.
for no reason.
Or his trigger fingers like fucking twitching.
Yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. Next
so
thing you know.
When we did the robbery, he had no shells in his gun. And and to this day, I'm glad I did that because he lost his mind. He was jumping up on the craps table and he was, everybody get out, screaming. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not how we rehearsed this shit, man. You're not playing your role right. And I remember there was a guy crawling on the ground, like scared. And fucking Pep goes, shoot him, kill him. He's trying to get away, kill him. And I had to like grab him, like calm the fuck down. If you're fucking like, we got to keep these people calm to control them. Well, this obviously wasn't my first robbery. And
still, you're 16 at this point, 15.
Yeah, I hadn't turned 16.
I mean, you're not even, you're a kid.
Yeah, pretty much. And so we locked everybody in the closet. And this is coming back to the Hollywood movie shit. We changed clothes and we got all the money in the guitar case and we're about to leave the ship. And we see like these 3 heads poking out from a door. And I realize like, oh shit, they're onto us. So we go to the gangplank to leave the ship and the gangplank is actually coming up. They're raising the gangplank to try to trap us on board the ship. And I tell Pep, go. And a Hollywood scene, dude, I had to actually run and like jump through the air to land. And we're running to the car because we had somebody waiting to pick us up. And then all these people come running off the ship behind us. It was funny as hell. All these little Filipino dudes, as we're here in Manila,
right.
working on the cruise ship, they come, ah! And I had a pistol in my waistband, and I turned around and I pointed at them, get back on the fucking boat. And they all turned around.
Well, they can't get it because now the gang, like Indiana Jones style.
They brought the gangplank back down for them to come in and chase me. But we jumped in the car and we got away, and I'll never forget. We got to my buddy Bert's crib, and he goes, what happened? I said, we're going to get caught. He goes, don't try it. I said, yeah, we're going to get caught. Because as we were leaving, these dudes were in the back seat whimpering. Like, oh, my God, I'll never do this again. I'm like, oh, man, we're fucked. Mm-hmm. These guys are going to get us fucked. And sure enough, we ended up going down for that. And in the case, I didn't snitch. I didn't say anything, and I ended up getting the most time because I had the violent juvenile record. I caught an 18-and-a-half-year sentence, of which I served 9-and-a-half. And then 10 years in prison, that's a whole other story. You know?
Yeah. And but so, obviously, I mean, to sit there and hear that, it's amazing, like crazy. And like I said, picturing this movie and everything, I mean, obviously, it's wild. It's a wild adventure, but it's obviously the wrong thing.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I don't glamorize it.
And now I'm saying, where do you realize, like, back to my mood, because in my mind, all I know of this is movies. And like, all I'm thinking of is Hurricane or what, you know, like, I don't know, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, is there, like, a wise old black man who is, like, in prison telling you were doing the wrong thing?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. Right? When I got to prison, I always say I was lucky because I got a buddy of mine who I'm still in touch with him today, Thomas McCampbell. You know, he was on death row. He's got a life sentence. And
the label? Is he a rapper?
No.
Horrible joke. Horrible.
Yeah, it took me a second.
We're talking real stuff here, and I have to throw in, sorry.
Okay. And I dig your sense of humor, but that one just went right over my head. But
you were impressed that I knew who Death Row was.
Yeah. Okay. No, but he was under the real Death Row. Okay. Like, you're going to the electric chair for killing these people. He got his sentence commuted to life, and it was him, another friend of mine, Paul Jacobson, who he's... sadly, he's just come up missing. Like, they think it's an old mob beef that came back to get him. But these were two of the older convicts in my life that when I was in prison pulled me to the side and said, hey, kid, you're way too smart for this. You know, you don't serve this time. Make this time serve you. You know, don't get out of here and do something with your life. And, you know, I used to have a little chip on my shoulder and be a bit of a hothead. And they pulled me to the side and said, man, just settle the fuck down. Let it go. You know, and I was very lucky that I did have these older convicts.
Right. And that's not like, I'm assuming that's not like, you can sit here and like, oh, that's like 3 days. But that's years, right?
Over a period of.
Of them advice in your head. Am I correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, over the. I met Paul when I first got to DeSoto, and I was at DeSoto for like 3 years, and then I was at Belgrade for about 3 years. I met McCampbell at Belgrade. So it's like every prison that I went to, there was like an older uncle-type figure to pull me to the side and say, hey, man, you know, there's a better way, you know. And fortunately, they actually, you know, kept me out of a lot of shit because there's an old saying, smart people learn from their mistakes, but wise people learn from the mistakes of others. And these guys, you know, spent a lot of time wising me up.
Where does wrestling come in does it come in the prison?
Dude, wrestling is actually really funny because my first time getting locked up, I was in a day juvenile detention center, and Death Row, here we're back to Death Row, Rozier, they had a career day. And, you know, they brought in all these different people. So Death Row was a pro wrestler. And, you know,
A wrestler named Death Row?
Yeah, he was a professional wrestler. He did a lot of stuff with Florida Championship Wrestling. And, he brought in Soul Man Alex G of the Soul Patrol, and they're talking about, you know, wrestling. And most of these dudes were being fucking clowns and jackasses, but I'm asking, like, real questions. Like, well, how do you do this, and what about that? And they're keeping kayfabe, you know, like, well, you know, if you can break a guy's neck if you do this. And so that was my first time meeting Soul Man Alex G. Fast forward to my work release. I'm about to get out of prison, and Primetime Daryl D., who's a correctional officer, / indie worker, he'd bring in videotapes in the morning for us to watch, you know, because I think we couldn't leave the center till 7. So, you know, like between 6:30 and 7, everybody would just kind of mill around by the front door waiting to leave, and he'd throw in a videotape of a pay-per-view or some indie shows. And I'm like, hey, man, that's Soul Man Alex G. He goes, yeah, you know him? I met him when I was in youth hall like 10 years ago.
That's wild.
And me and Primetime kind of hit it off, and I would always ask him questions about wrestling, and I wanted to know the kayfabe stuff. Like, man, how do you do that and not break your back? You know? And he's like, well, I tell you what, I want to start my own indie promotion. And I didn't even know what indies were. I didn't know indies existed. You know, all I knew was WWF, you know. And he said, well, when you get out, if you want to, and I'll teach you how to take some bumps, and if, you know, if it's something you want to do, we can pursue it. And I'm like, I need a hobby, cool. So a few months after I got out, he gave me a call, and he said, you ready? I said, yeah. He said, okay, we'll take a few more months. You just got home. You did a long bid. And he had a ring set up in his backyard. And I went to his house one day and started training. And I, as the term goes, I stepped in shit. I discovered a passion. And it was totally by accident. I never aspired to be a professional wrestler. It was just an opportunity that dropped in my lap. And he had to take his ring down. So he took me to, get this, Duke the Dumpster Drozen.
Yes.
His wrestling school.
Yes.
It's time to take out the trash.
My fist is pumping away as you say this.
Duke the Dumpster had a wrestling school that he was never at.
Is he your friend?
I wouldn't say Duke and I are friends. No. But we were acquaintances. I liked him. He was a really cool guy. Funny as hell. Incredibly quick-witted. But he was never at the school.
Did he make Death Row label jokes? Did he make Death Row rap label jokes?
He made a lot of really funny jokes. He was funny as hell. But as luck would have it, guess who was his head trainer at the school? Soul Man Alex G.
Wow.
So here we go. Full circle. Primetime takes me to Duke the Dumpster School and goes to his buddy Alex and says, hey, man, this guy right here is a friend of mine. I want you to train him. So Alex trained me at Duke school as a favor, and I never paid a dime for wrestling school.
Did you tell Alex of
Oh yeah, we laughed about it.
You know, right away again. Or did
it might have been, you know, a day or two. I didn't just right then say, right. You. But you know, it came up because, you know, we were talking and I told him about it, and you know, he remembered and we laughed about it and whatnot. But it was a pretty cool experience. And then, you know, I began my pursuit of
What was your first wrestling name? Is it Antonio Banks?
High profile Tony Style.
Yes.
High profile Tony Style. And it's funny because my ex-wife used to tease me. She said, MVP is high profile Tony Style. You just repackaged the same guy, the same gimmick, and put it out there. And I said, yeah, you know what? Yeah, pretty much. That's just what I did. So high profile Tony Style became Antonio Banks. And then Antonio Banks wrestled in Puerto Rico and throughout the Indies. And
We shared a couple of locker rooms down in Florida. Did. Yeah,
a couple of times. And ultimately, I went to the OVW tryout camp. And Norman Smiley, who was one of the guys that helped train me, helped polish me up. I remember asking him because it was like $1,500 for the OVW tryout camp. And I didn't have any money at this time. And, you know, I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get that money together. But, I said, man, that's a work, man. What paying $1,500 to go there for a week? And it just doesn't seem right to me. And Norman said, Hassan, let me tell you something. The only thing that we know for certain is that if you don't go, nothing will happen.
Yeah.
I said, man, you know what? You're right. So I got my money together. I drove to Louisville. I went to the tryout camp, and that's where I met Dr. Tom. And they never called me back. God damn it, tell Jim Cornette and Nightmare Danny Davis. They never called me back. But at the time, Dr. Tom was still, talent relations. And I asked him, like, well, what do I have to do to get signed and get a developmental deal? And he explained the process. And I said, well, can I get a dark match or something? He said, you've never been booked? I said, no. I said, all right, well, next time we come to Florida. And, you know, I had a few. Every time they came to Florida, I was one of the guys that got, you know, booked as an extra. And one day I went to Johnny, and I asked Johnny straight up. I'm like, I said, Johnny, can I have a few minutes of your time? And he goes, I'm busy. I said, give me 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. He goes, okay, what do you want? I said, tell me what the fuck I got to do to get hired. And he looked at me, and he was like, all right. He said, well, look, we like you. We just don't have anything for you. He said, we're going back to character-based, you know, wrestling. He said, come up with a character we don't already have and get back to me. And I felt, man, this motherfucker just blew me off, man. But at the time, I was working on South Beach doing bodyguard work and nightclub security. And I would see these pro athletes that would come in. You know, I met Barry Sanders, Dr. J, Shaq. I mean, legitimate Hall of Famers. When they'd come out to the club, dude, they were so approachable, humble. You know, I stood outside of the living room on South Beach shooting the shit with Barry Sanders for 20 minutes, you know. But then you get these guys.
I loved you in Tecmo, sir. I loved your work in Tecmo.
You were my favorite Tecmo Bowl. Yeah, he's one of my all-time favorite.
Of course.
For me, the question is: what if Barry Sanders was able to run behind Emmitt Smith's line? Right. I think we would have seen our first 4,000-yard rush. Right. But anyway,
you'd see these dudes. Sorry, I interrupted you. You'd see these other guys besides them.
Yeah, and then you'd see these guys that were like, you know, first round draft picks that haven't done fuck all. They got all this money and they show up to the club like the world owes them something. And then I'd be like, man, this dude's a fucking prick. Fuck you. And then it dawned on me, like, I don't like this guy. Nobody likes this guy. Wait a minute, this hasn't been done in wrestling. It's a relatively new phenomenon. And anytime you turn on ESPN, there's some athlete that did or said some stupid shit. So, man, there's a wealth of material here. Mm. So I had the idea, and I hit up Johnny, and he said, put it on paper. Give me something that I could look at that I could show creative. And I put together a treatment, and to this day they still joke about – or they don't joke. They talk about how professional it was because I'm like, hey, man, I'm trying to get a job. And MVP was born. I created
Well, this MVP. Treatment that you made, did you sit down with somebody to help you? Or like,
it was all me.
I mean, so you knew the
– I had the idea.
The forum and the form of how to do it, yeah.
Not really. I just figured, you know, I put it together in chapters and put it together in a way that made the most sense. I put, you know, pictures of me in suits and what MVP was and how he dressed and how he spoke. And I wrote like 20 different vignettes and storylines, and I had it, you know, bounded and, you know, chapters. And mm-hmm. with it, I sent a tape that had two promos. One was 60 seconds, so I could show him I could hit a cue. And the other one was like 4.5 minutes. I just wanted to show that I could kill time. And they loved it. And they gave MVP was born. They gave me a shot.
And now, just to bounce around a little bit, because I want to get some wrestling talk in. When you were in developmental, I mean, and you've told me the story, but I've heard, like, you know, like my fear of just like any kind of rocking the boat, you know, I just feared that they'd be like, ah, you're fucking fired. Leave us alone. Stop bugging us. But I mean, there was a point where you just cut a promo on all the writers and were like, right? And just like, hey. And like, I dream, even to this day, I still like dream of being like, fuck you, writers, I'm the man. Like, let's go. Let's do this. I want to make you so much money. But you actually legit did that. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when they started doing Shelton. Well, he was coming out with the unbuttoned shirt and the sunglasses, and Jim Ross referred to him as the Terrell Owens of the WWE. I'm like, man, that's my fucking gimmick, man. And that's what I was so terrified to pitch the gimmick to Johnny. I was scared they were going to steal my shit.
Of course.
But they signed me. So I couldn't understand like why they signed me for this gimmick, and they got me doing the shit at OVW, but they got Shelton on TV calling him the Terrell Owens of Raw. And I called Chris DeJoseph, the writer, and he said, hey, man, no, we got big plans for you. Don't worry. Everything's cool. And I'm like, man, these motherfuckers are full of shit. And every other week, we'd have to cut promos for The Office. And that next day, I said, man, fuck that shit, man. I'm either going to get called up or fired. And we were supposed to cut it off. I think you had 1 minute, 1 or 2 minutes for the promo. And I told the camera guy, I said, hey, listen, bro, I'm going to run a little long. So please, no matter what, just keep the camera running. And I just cut a fucking shoot promo, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, I don't remember word for word, but one of the things I remember saying is that, you know, in a nutshell, you know, what I have, you can't put in a bottle. You know, I am all of these things. You're trying to make something that's not, and, you know, and.
But this wasn't a character, though. This was you, like, yelling at them.
I remember. I actually said to the camera, I said, I do recall now. I said, wait a minute. You know, here for the first time in my life, I have an opportunity to make my dreams come true so that I can forget about being poor. I have an opportunity to become rich. And you want to take that away from me? I said, I want you to remember something. I'm the guy that used to stick a shotgun in people's mouths and take from them. You don't take from me. I said, don't let the smile fool you, because this is how I get next to you. This is how I get close to you. You feel safe and comfortable, and that's when I stick a shotgun in your mouth and take from you, you know, or something like that.
And that's you basically threatening them on tape, going, call me the fuck up or I'll go.
Well, in a nutshell, I'm saying, if you take my shit, I'm coming to see you.
Yeah. It's
it's funny because Brian Gewirtz, I actually call him a Mets dweeb, because Brian Gewirtz, he's the head writer. And he's such a little dweeb. That dude trips me out. But he actually came to me when I got called up for a dark match or whatever. And he goes, MVP, that promo that you cut was very disturbing. I said, oh, yeah, I'm glad you found it that way. You know, and it's real. That's me.
And that's how they hear you.
And it's funny because from what I understand, Vince popped for the promo. He liked that. He goes, yeah, this guy's got passion. Right. It's real. Yeah, okay, so... But, like you said, not ruffling feathers, when I got called up, you know, they always say, don't step on, you know, don't be afraid to step on toes. Don't be afraid to ruffle feathers. But what they don't tell you is be very careful what toes you step on and whose feathers you ruffle. They don't tell you that part. Because if you step on the wrong toes, you find yourself in a 22-week losing streak, you know.
Right. Yeah. Man. Okay, I do want to get you. You are, I mean, obviously... what a run you had, you know, MVP, the character in WWE, and now New Japan.
Yeah.
I know you're ecstatic about that.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, just a quick, good times, doing what you wanted to do?
Well, what I just, you know, a lot of people don't know that, you know, as I was coming up on the Indies, my dream was always to wrestle in Japan. You know, I used to study all the Japanese tapes, and, you know, Tokyo Dome was like my goal, my dream, and that's how Chris Benoit and I became such close friends, because I would talk to him about Japanese wrestling. Before I got signed, you know, we met on one of my tryouts, and WWE was like, it's one of those things where I tell people the analogy. I always wanted a Corvette, and I ended up with a Lamborghini, but I never got my Corvette. So, you know, I put my Corvette in the garage. I went out, I put my Lamborghini in the garage. I went out, got my Corvette, and now I'm cruising with the top down. You know, I asked for my release from WWE, and John Laurinaitis was cool enough to work with me to grant me. I had a year left on my deal, and he was trying to get me to resign. And I said, man, I don't want to resign. I want to go to Japan. And they were nice enough to allow me to go. And, dude, I'm having the time of my life.
Awesome.
And hell, I'm right here chilling with you, yeah, doing the Art of Wrestling podcast in Manila.
I'm fucking in Manila, man. This is crazy. Your single is called
Holla to the World.
Holla to the World. And it's available on iTunes?
It's going to be on iTunes real soon. I just finally got it. It's funny how that happened. Holla to the World was a song I wrote one day on the plane. I had this beat, and I wrote it. And, you know, I didn't initially intend for it to be like my debut single. It was just a song I was having fun with, and everything just kind of came together, and the song was good. And then the producer that I've been working with, Mikhail Zibi, he's a, you know, platinum artist, a platinum producer. He has all this video equipment. He shoots videos in Houston. He goes, hey, you want to shoot a video for it? I'm like, well, what would be the budget? He said, dude, I think we could probably shoot a video for less than $5,000 if we do it at your house. I'm like, all right.
Only if Carlito can be in a jacuzzi.
I asked Carlito. That was his idea for that spot. You know, Carlito came up with that. I'm like, that's because I want him to be in the jacuzzi, you know, pimped out with these chicks. And he's like, nah, it'd be better if I do this. I'm like, dude, that's awesome. By all means, let's do it. So it's not on iTunes yet. I finally got it mixed and mastered. It's going to be on iTunes soon. And I'm actually now, I've been working on what started as a mixtape project, which now may actually become an album. I got a few more songs, and it's just coming together, and I'm having a blast. But it will be available on iTunes soon. And if you haven't heard it, you can go to MVP305.com, and you can watch it there. Or you can go to my YouTube channel. It's YouTube.com/MVP305brand, and it's there along with my my YouTube shows, my sessions, as I call them, in ode to Cowboy Bebop, big anime fan that I am. You never heard of Cowboy Bebop?
No.
Oh, dude, it's one of the baddest, coolest anime Japanese cartoons ever. It's like really, I watch it sometimes.
Right. My brother used to try to make me watch it as a kid.
Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo.
What's the main one? Akira or something?
Oh, Akira, yeah, that's a classic.
That's what my brother
classic,
had me watch.
That's actually a pretty good one. But this one, Cowboy Bebop, is a series. But yeah, and what is it in Japanese? Otaku? It's like nerd.
Okay. Oh, you are an otaku.
Yeah.
Right, and your Twitter?
At the 305 MVP. And I make this very clear. It says it. If you are easily offended, do not follow me. I speak my mind. I'm a non-traditionalist. I'm very opinionated. And I say how I feel, and I don't care about your feelings.
I like it. Most importantly, I hope you have been talking about a book, a movie, or something. It's awesome, man. This is crazy. And we just scratched the surface. And that's the whole point is, you know, there's so much of it. I can't wait till you tell it and you get your platform to tell it however you want or whatever. It's amazing, man. It's crazy life. It's wildlife. And I'm glad you shared it with me.
No, thank you. I've been wanting to do this for a while. We were supposed to do this back with the Wrestling Revolution project. And, you know, for whatever reason, we didn't get a chance to. But I'm honored and flattered that the legendary classic Colt Cabana would have me on his podcast. I want to ask you something real quick.
Sure.
Now, I remember years ago when ROH was in its early stages and it was the new hot thing. And I watched a match where you came out to the ring, and I always wanted to know if it was an accident or if somebody was fucking with you, but they started slowing your music down, and as you were doing your entrance, you actually slowed down with the music, and then it sped up, and you...
Total accident.
That was all improv.
Somebody did something fucked up, and it's just... I remember that. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I know that wasn't like, hey, can you do this and that? And it's those little things that, you know, that you remember, that somebody remembers that. Yeah, yeah, I started doing that. I started doing the robot.
Yeah,
I remember exactly.
I remember,
and
I was like,
I'd go down, I'd pull myself back up.
This is fucking awesome.
And it's those little things, and I'm a firm believer in this, is that that's what somebody would remember. That's why that's likable Colt Cabana. And this is for a whole other podcast, but that wasn't scripted, wasn't planned. Maybe that made me a little bit, you know, in your eyes, you're like, oh, this shit, this guy's funny, whatever. And that just doesn't happen a lot in wrestling anymore.
Sadly, no.
Because it's all so scripted.
So micromanaged. Yeah,
right.
You don't have those opportunities to do that kind of stuff anymore. Let me say this real quick, because on that, you'll appreciate this. One of my career highlights was my on-segment, my own personal interview segment that I had when I was on SmackDown, the VIP lounge.
And I always like just the simple things of having the guy open the velvet rope. Or the
rope. Yeah, yeah.
Just the little things. Yeah, I always appreciate
that. Man. That's, you know, they got my door, man. Mm-hmm. You can't get in without being on the list. Ric Flair was my guest. And I'll never forget Ed Koski, who's one of the writers. Ed's a cool guy. He's sitting there typing up verbiage for me and Rick, and we're sitting there, we're going over it, and the show's getting ready to start, and he goes, okay, well, I'm gonna give you guys got a few minutes to go over this before the show starts. We walk out in the hallway, we walk towards Gorilla, and the Nature Boy, the legendary Ric Flair, looks at me and he says, kid, you don't need this, do you? And I'm like, nah, I don't. He took my script from me, took his script, tore it up, threw it in the garbage. And we went out there and we did the VIP lounge. And I have to tell you, if you go back and watch it on YouTube, it was probably the best VIP lounge I had ever done. And it was MVP and the Nature Boy going at it old school, word for word, off the top of the dome. I mean, we had to do an afternoon rehearsal for the physicality. But, you know, arguably the greatest talker in the business. And
Ric Flair.
And Ric Flair. So, yeah, it's those moments where you are able to just go off script and you're not being micromanaged and you can do what you do. And I remember you and I had a conversation once, I think it was at Ken's wedding, and I was talking to you about your style and your personality. And while I thought if you were given the right circumstances, you'd be able to flourish and you'd do so great. But in the WWE universe, as it was at that time, I remember telling you, I don't know if they understand what a Colt Cabana is and how a Colt Cabana works, and you might have to be something that you're not to work in that system. I don't know if you remember us having that conversation.
Course. It was in the bathroom.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was in the bathroom down. And it's sad that, you know, Scotty Goldman stopped by for a cup of coffee and no one ever got to see, you know, Colt Cabana do what he does, and those moments like that, you know, just that unscripted improvisational, hey, this is what we do. And I think that's what's wrong with the industry today, WWE leading the way. Everything is so incredibly micromanaged. You'll never have the Attitude Era again, because Rock and Austin and all those guys, no one was writing their scripts for them word for word. I mean, they had an outline. They went out there and they said what they said and they did it. And it was wonderful. But nowadays, you got all these young guys coming up, many of which didn't pursue wrestling. They were recruited. And everything is micromanaged down to a dime, and they memorize scripts.
Right, and afraid to go off script.
And are afraid to take a chance.
To make memorable moments.
Yeah, and that's what you got to do. To make a memorable moment, sometimes you gotta you know, step out of range, get hit by a train, and then you won't be a chicken anymore.
I like it. Where's to live by?
There he is, MVP. He don't give a fuck. Always good to know about MVP. Excellent podcast this week. What a story he's got to tell. And I only believe we just scratched the surface. There's got to be so much more to this guy. But it was very intriguing. I appreciate him opening up and letting us in a little bit. So that's it for this week. It's been a good podcast. Before we get out of here, though, let's get into some plugs and
upcoming events.
All right, the best way you can support, go on over to coltmerch.com. T-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, and DVDs. If you got a couple bucks and you like the podcast, you can support at coltmerch.com. My Twitter, follow me, at Colt Cabana. See who the next guest on The Art of Wrestling is going to be. I usually have a picture up with me and the guest. See what I have to say about the world of wrestling, or just in general, at Colt Cabana. My email, coltwrestling@gmail.com. You got something important to say to me, or you want to book me on your upcoming show, convention, seminar, movie, TV show, you name it, I'll do it. coltwrestling@gmail.com. I have a snail mail. I enjoy getting that. I got a P.O. box. It's on the front page of welovecolt.com. every single Monday night right before wrestling. I have a web series with myself and stand-up comedian Marty DeRosa. You can watch those at creativehasnothingforyou.com. And then I got the Facebook. You should like it, AOW Podcast. We'll talk about each episode or anything you want about the podcast over there on Facebook. Some upcoming events, Sunday, February 12th, Glendale, California, NWAHollywood.com. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, February 14th, 15th, and 16th, Hollywood, California, LuchaVavoom.com. Come see Matt Classic wrestle. Saturday, February 18th, Hayward, California, up near San Francisco, AllProWrestling.com. Friday, February 24th, Marionette Park, Illinois, AAWrestling.com. Saturday and Sunday, February 25th and 26th, in Reading, Pennsylvania, and Long Island, New York. We talked about this a little bit already, but go visit me at ChikaraPro.com. Then we start the Road Diaries, Wrestling Road Diaries 2, Wednesday, February 29th, Olney, Illinois. I'm going to be wrestling for IWA Unlimited. Thursday, March 1st, around Evansville area, SNPW. Still working on those details. Friday, March 2nd, Cleveland, Ohio. My friends over at AIWrestling.com are very excited for Luke Gallows and Mr. 1859. I know that. Saturday, March 3rd, LaSalle, Illinois, DreamWaveWrestling.com. And then Sunday, March 4th, at ChallengerComics.com in Chicago, Illinois, a free podcast and meet and greet to end the movie. Go visit us over there. Then I continue my life. Friday, March 9th, Rahway, New Jersey, ProWrestlingSyndicate.com. And then Saturday and Sunday, March 10th and 11th, I'm heading to Newfoundland, Canada, that area. For more information, LegendCityWrestling.com. That's it, guys. That's the podcast for this week. For Colt Cabana, I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.
Yeah, X-Pac, come on in.
Yeah, hey, Vince, I got this idea, right? I'm thinking about, it's a little off the wall, but I want to point directly at my penis and then say, like, suck on my penis.
Sean, it has legs. There's something there. You point at your penis and you tell people to blow it. Let me think, blow on my dick. No, maybe suck on my penis. No, it's something short and sweet and right to the point. Suck it! Yeah! Yeah, there it is. Suck it, and you'll come out, and you violently point at your dick. Yeah, and then you say, suck it. Yeah, the kids will love it. We'll put it on T-shirts, and they'll wear it in school, and kids will just be talking to their teachers, and they'll be like, homework. Oh, suck it, and they'll point at the dicks, and yeah, it'll be green and black and X's, and suck it. There we go, do it. Okay, who's next? Yeah, I love it. Yeah.